Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PI.org, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the Democratic and Republican nominees for governor appeared at the same event this week. They did not share a stage, but they did talk about some of the same issues. We'll have more on what they had to say. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Ben Zielinski, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Ben, good to have you back on the show with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
So we'll start, Ben, with you. You were at this Illinois Agricultural Legislative Roundtable held at a farm near Bloomington. J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic nominee, shows up. So does Darren Bailey, the Republican nominee. Both of them answered some questions. So did we learn anything new?
There wasn't a lot new. I think it really highlighted a lot of the, you know, opposing ground or the same ground that we've talked about, you know, throughout this entire election, or even 4 years ago when Bailey and Pritzker first ran against each other. It was kind of a run-of-the-mill repeat of a number of the various ideas and criticisms from both guys that we've heard. One of the newest things I think that came out of it was the governor firmly took a stance on the estate tax this time. He's always kind of supported this idea of we need to reform the estate tax here in Illinois, but he voiced support for a specific bill this time around, which was a new position for him. To actually hear him support a specific idea. So outside of that, I think it was a lot of kind of the same ground. You know, Darren Bailey did have to, you know, discuss President Trump, which is a different thing than 4 years ago when he ran, when, you know, President Biden was in office. You know, Bailey this time around is, you know, essentially forced to defend what, you know, the president's policies are, given he's a member of the same party. So that was kind of a difference to hear him talk a little bit more about tariffs and other things. But, you know, the beginning of campaign season, I guess, it's helping to get it going a little bit, but a lot of the same ground was covered.
Yeah, Charlie, that's a good point, because I always used to think that the state fair was the kickoff to the campaign, really, because we would see stump speeches and a lot of different events taking place around this time. Well, this happened just a little bit before the fair. The fair is getting ready to start here this week, end of the week. But this matchup is similar. The two ran against each other just 4 years ago. Charlie, do you see anything different this time around?
Not really. I think one of the big differences is some of the big money people that gave to Bailey last time out aren't there for him now. And so he's going to be outspent incredibly. His appeal really doesn't extend much beyond southern and central Illinois. He doesn't have a whole lot of appeal up in the Chicago area. And he's admitted that in the comments that they made, and they didn't appear at the Farm Bureau thing in Shirley. They didn't appear together at any point. Each had their separate appearance. One of the things that Bailey said was that he'd be speaking out on behalf of the farmers and the agriculture, but he also defended Trump's tariffs on imported goods. And he said he'd work with the president. He said that basically Pritzker hates President Trump more than he loves Illinois. And talking about the tariffs, Bailey said, "I do believe that these tariffs that are imposed are, I call it the same from day one as I do now, a short-term pain for long-term gain. And it's the only tool that we have to get competitive again. But I'm not sure the people in central Illinois or elsewhere are agreed with, yeah, we have to put up with this stuff that's going on with the Iran war, going on with oil prices, that this is good for us. We just have to kind of suck it up and hope for the best." I'm not sure that's a political message that's going to sell very well. It was interesting, too, because Pritzker slammed Bailey at one point, saying that his record doesn't show he can deliver any results for farmers. And this is in meeting with reporters after the actual event was over. And here's a quote from him. Darren Bailey hasn't done anything for farms. He passed two bills when he was in the state legislature, and they had nothing to do with farms. And he doesn't have a proposal for anybody that makes sense. So the battle lines are drawn, I guess, between Pritzker defending his record, Bailey attacking it, and Bailey, in what I consider to be an awkward position, having to defend some of the policies of the Trump administration that I think don't play very well in the agricultural community.
Hmm. Yeah, Ben, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, this should be a very friendly event for Darren Bailey. He is a farmer. He's from what you would consider downstate, more east central Illinois. Was it evident that it was a friendly event for him? Did he get a pretty good reception, or were people more skeptical because of some of the things Charlie talked about?
I think it was, you know, kind of a friendly event to him. You know, most of the people in that room were more of the political types involved with the Illinois Farm Bureau and other agriculture groups. So they, you know, they know their way around politics to be friendly to any politician. And, you know, so it was, I think, really hard to gauge kind of the reaction from the room. But Bailey himself looked really comfortable speaking to that group. He had a lot of energy, talked about, you know, a lot of his own experiences on the farm and whatnot. So I think, you know, it's certainly easy territory for him because he is a farmer. He knows the ins and outs of what it takes to do the job. So I think, yeah, he was overall very comfortable and, you know, felt like he could speak knowledgeably about farm issues in front of that group. But, you know, I think maybe one of the areas where it probably he probably ran into a few troubles or struggles, you know, kind of, you know, trying to maintain a position and stake out, you know, what he believes is probably on that tariff issue. I think there's a lot of farmers around Illinois who are quite frustrated with the tariffs. We have heard that from agriculture groups for, you know, the last year and a half of Donald Trump's presidency now. You know, Bailey defends those in a way. So, I don't know Bailey's personal experience and how the tariffs have specifically impacted his business, but I think that's kind of probably an area though where he might find some disagreement even among a friendly crowd.
Well, one of the things that he has attacked Pritzker on and Democrats in general has been property taxes. He says they're too high. He's got a proposal to cap property taxes. How was that received, and what did Pritzker have to say about it?
Yeah, I think his proposal was generally pretty well received. You know, people obviously in Illinois struggle with property taxes. Bailey wants to cap property taxes at 1%. So one of the big questions there is, how are you going to pay for the rest of what your property tax bill pays for? And that's the question that Governor Pritzker brought up is, you know, the governor responded to Bailey's idea by saying it's a great idea. He would love to, you know, institute a low cap on property taxes to keep property tax bills down. But how are you going to pay for government services? Because our property taxes fund so much here in Illinois, you know, roads and schools and our local governments are funded by property taxes. So, you know, I think that's the question that Bailey is going to need to answer. And I think a lot of folks are pretty in tune with what their property tax dollars do go towards and do, I think, realize that there is an open end to that, that you can't just cap property taxes without figuring out where the rest of the money is going to come from. Because really, I think it's if you cap property taxes at a certain level, you know, the rest of that's going to have to be made up by the state. That's an income tax increase, a corporate income tax increase, sales tax increase. People are going to pay for it other ways.
And Charlie, that's a legitimate point. I mean, if, yeah, you take that money away and say, we're not going to contribute this money from property taxes, again, something else is going to have to take its place. So that's a legitimate comeback to that argument.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that Pritzker said in another news conference, talking about property taxes, and it's kind of a dig at local school districts. And he said, here's his quote, "It strikes me that our local governments, in particular our school boards, ought to take the hint that if we're putting more money into education, a lot of it should go into hiring teachers and making our schools better, but some of it should go into property tax relief, or at least stop raising property taxes across the state." And that was his suggestion, that maybe you guys should tighten your belts. And it's not just school districts, because property taxes support all kinds of local stuff, local governments, like park districts, for example, get supported by property taxes, a lot of other things. And there's an argument to be made that Illinois has more local governments than any other state, and maybe we should consolidate some of them. But there's always been the opposition from the locals. And somebody might say, well, we ought to consolidate township districts. And it goes before the legislature, and most lawmakers have a lot of other stuff on their mind. This isn't really high priority. But the districts that are being consolidated, for them, that's the number one priority. And so it's easier if you're a lawmaker to tell the district, oh, yeah, well, I won't go along with it, when it's really not that important in the grand scheme of things, whereas you have this constituent who's all over your case for whom it's the most important thing going. And so that's in my mind, it's real complex. But as I say, I believe Illinois relies more heavily on local property taxes to fund schools than most any other state.
And Charlie, if there's one issue that Bailey may gain some real traction on, it may be property taxes, because you ask anybody about property taxes and their bills, they're going to say they're too high. So the question, again, gets back to that point of how do you make up that money? Because one thing I have learned covering government through the years is, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, it is hard to cut the budget.
Yeah, and part of the difficulty is that property taxes fund a whole lot of different things. For example, I'm looking now at my Sangamon County tax bill for the home where I live on the west side of Springfield near Washington Park. The Springfield School District, Lincolnland Community College, Capital Township, the Airport Authority, the Metropolitan Exposition Authority, which is the convention center, the Springfield City, Springfield Mass Transit, Springfield Park District, Water Reclamation for Sangamon County, and the county itself. So there's all these separate units of government, and some of them are very small. They provide very specialized services. And if you're a state lawmaker, you've got a lot of stuff on your plate. And so maybe some group comes in and says, well, we ought to consolidate. There's no need for Chatham to have its own school board. It could be partnered with Springfield. And for the average lawmaker, maybe those who are in those districts, they're concerned, but for the average lawmaker, consolidating a couple districts isn't a big deal. But for the people who work for those school districts or other units of local government, consolidation is a very big deal. So if I'm a lawmaker from, Freeport, and there's talk about consolidating some district in Sangamon County, I don't really give a care. I got much bigger things on the plate. But for the affected ones, they are very effective at lobbying against things that would change their status personally, that to the broader General Assembly, it's not a big deal. So it's easier to say to the people being affected, oh, yeah, I understand. No, I won't vote for that, than it is to try and buck them. And so that's just probably the nature, I guess, of representative democracy. That's kind of the way it works.
You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
And we're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler and Ben Zielinski of Capital News Illinois. Ben, give us an update on a working group that is being put together by the House Speaker. This involves some sexual harassment allegations that led to the resignation of the State Representative Harry Benton. But a lot of the focus recently has been on how the House Speaker Chris Welch handled those allegations when he became aware of them. But it is off to a rocky start, to say the least. What is happening with that?
Yeah, it seems this group is going to go forward, though we really have not heard from hardly anybody who's actually a part of it. And the Speaker's office has not formally announced who's going to be part of this working group, besides leaking a memo to a friendly lobbyist or political ally. That's a really unusual thing for the Speaker's office, because they have typically told us in the media through news releases who is a member of every working group that he creates. So that's kind of one of the things that's really different about this group. But this week we heard from Representative Greg Johnson from the Quad Cities, who said he is also not going to be participating in this working group. That follows Representative Kelly Cassidy from Chicago, who said right at the beginning that she wouldn't be part of this. And Johnson told us that basically he's just displeased with kind of how this whole thing has been rolled out. He's concerned about serving on a group where he believes some of his fellow colleagues have already staked a position one way or another about Speaker Welch's own behavior and how he has interacted with people on social media, as well as his overall handling of the Harry Benton situation. He has singled out Representative Lisa Davis as one person he's not comfortable serving with on this working group, because she was on WGN TV in Chicago a few weeks ago defending Speaker Welch. Interestingly enough, just days later, Speaker Welch apologized for those same actions that she defended. So there is definitely some turmoil within the Democratic House caucus over this working group, and whether members believe this is a good idea, is actually going to achieve even any results that's going to result in a better process, for the House. And I think one of the overall points people like Kelly Cassidy have made is that they believe, it's about taking victims of sexual harassment seriously, and not just having a process in place to deal with that situation. It's about actually listening to them, believing these victims, and taking appropriate next steps rather than just going through some written out process.
And maybe it's just me, Ben, but I gotta say the way this is rolling out is just weird, it seems to me. This is an opportunity for Welch to try to move forward, and I'm surprised at how botched this seems. Am I off the mark with that?
No, I've been surprised at every turn of this thing, I think. I didn't expect Speaker Welch to talk to the media about it. Turns out I ended up being one of four reporters who got an opportunity to talk in detail with Speaker Welch about his actions, his handling of the situation. I was surprised by that. I wasn't sure if maybe they were going to try and just let this blow over, but he wanted to talk about the working group and other steps that he says the House is going to be taking to, ensure this does not happen again. I think one of the things that has been most surprising about this whole thing is that the Speaker has not really been able to make amends with some members on it. Some members are still very openly frustrated by how he has handled this situation. We are, at halfway through this calendar year. There's an election coming up, and at the end of that election, there's going to be new elections for the Speaker of the House. We assume Democrats will be in control, and I think one of the questions folks are asking is Speaker Welch, is he safe in his job? Is he going to continue to be the Speaker in January? And I think, we haven't really heard from anybody other than one representative, Fred Crespo, who already, he and Speaker Welch have some personal issues there. But there's people openly frustrated with his leadership right now, and it's time is ticking, I think, for him to kind of make those amends and to see some progress. Veto session is going to tell us a lot, I think, about the speaker's future.
Charlie, any thoughts on, we've talked about this in the past, but any thoughts on what you're seeing? It seems like, again, it's almost very amateurish right now of what we're seeing, especially for somebody that I think is such a skilled political person.
Yeah. One of the things I found interesting is that the governor at an unrelated news conference last week was pretty skeptical about the working group. And he said that he don't think they need a brainstorming session. And here's a quote. I've seen working groups go on for a year and a half. There's no time here. There are already models for dealing with this in other states. I believe that there doesn't need to be much of a discussion through a working group. He said that it was important for this to happen very quickly. And here's another quote. We're not reinventing the wheel here. The nation has figured out how to allow someone to come forward and make sure that they get justice when they've been harassed. Should not take long for us to get a result here. And so I found that that was really pretty strong criticism of Welch's approach. Of course, the House Republicans were even more dismissive. And they said in a statement that it appears to be more about repairing the Speaker's political standing than repairing the culture of the Illinois House. Here's a quote. If Speaker Welch were serious about reform, he would have created a bipartisan working group committed to meaningful change. Instead, he appointed an all-Democratic panel, shutting Republicans out of a conversation that should transcend party politics.
You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
And we're back on State Week. Just a couple of minutes left here. Ben, you reported this week about vaccines, because vaccines were in the news at the federal level as President Trump issued an executive order, cast some doubt on certain vaccines. But basically here in Illinois, it sounds like, according to the Department of Public Health and the Pritzker administration, nothing's changing.
Yeah, nothing's going to be changing here in Illinois. Governor Pritzker basically characterized President Trump's executive order as, quote, a thoughtless piece of paper. So that's, I think, tells you everything right there as far as how Illinois officials are reacting to President Trump's executive order. But, you know, some of the key things I think people are probably going to be asking about is, what does this mean? And, you know, what are other people recommending beyond the federal government? Essentially, the President's executive order tries to de-emphasize the importance of a few vaccines, making them only recommended for higher risk children rather than all children. And these are things like hepatitis and the flu shot and COVID, some pretty basic things that everybody has received as a child. The state of Illinois is going to continue following the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines, which the state health department adopted earlier this year as the guidelines for the state's vaccine recommendations going forward. So people in Illinois aren't really seeing any change to what's recommended. State health officials say that the president's executive order is not grounded in science. The president certainly expressed a number of opinions during his news conference about, you know, various things that have been debunked by science, such as the relationship between vaccines and autism. There is no changes essentially going forward for Illinois. The MMR vaccine, I know folks are going to have a lot of questions about, still going to be offered as a single dose, I think, under Illinois health officials' recommendations. So it's an issue Illinois officials are certainly watching and taking pretty seriously, even as the federal government makes a whole lot of changes to the vaccine scene.
And Charlie, no surprise that this announcement was made this week following the Trump administration effort?
No, not at all. Pritzker's quote saying that Trump's executive order is a thoughtless piece of paper that does not reverse decades of research and scientific evidence about protecting kids. And that's what it comes down to. There's, in my judgment, this fringe element that appears to be growing that just does not trust science. They don't trust science on climate change. They don't trust science on medical issues. They don't trust science on anything. And instead, they have this small group of fellow believers that they rally around. And again, this is my perspective, but unfortunately for public health in this country, those same disbelievers are now kind of in control of the federal health structure. And this notion that vaccines cause autism, all kinds of studies over decades that have firmly concluded there is no link.
Time now for our notes from the field, and we'll go to Ben first.
This week we heard from Bear CEO Kevin Warren for the first time, responding to, you know, news that the team is going to be focusing on Indiana going forward. And also he had an opportunity to reflect on, what happened here in Illinois, what went wrong. And Kevin Warren basically said he doesn't feel that any mistakes were made in the Bears' processes in dealing with Illinois lawmakers. Certainly a number of Illinois lawmakers have expressed an opinion that would say that the Bears have made a lot of mistakes. Governor Pritzker has listed several in the past that he believes the Bears should have done better on. Going forward, the Bears conversation is certainly going to be continuing, but I think, Bears fans who have been long asking this question about, what happened? What are the Bears even thinking? I finally got to hear a little bit this week from the team's top leaders about what they believe happened here with the Illinois General Assembly, as well as where their team's focus is currently.
And Charlie.
Well, during a ceremony at the Executive Mansion earlier this week, Governor Pritzker signed an executive order renaming the Illinois State Armory as the Governor Jim Edgar Executive Office Building. And that's in memory of the former governor who passed away last September from pancreatic cancer at the age of 79. Pritzker said, quote, "Public servants will walk through the doors of the Jim Edgar Executive Office Building, committed to solving problems just as he was. Decisions will be made there that lift up the people of Illinois, that strengthen our economy, that save lives, improve public services, and hold a brighter future for our state. There can be no greater tribute to Jim Edgar than a place dedicated to executive leadership in government, because public service was the work of his life." Edgar's widow, Brenda, was there for the ceremony, and so was Edgar's daughter, Elizabeth. Elizabeth said, quote, "Our family hopes that everyone who goes through the doors, whether they are governors, legislators, staff members, interns, students, or visitors, will remember that government can be principled, compassionate, responsible, and bipartisan all at the same time." Now, as someone who covered Edgar from day one in his public life, I think that pretty well sums him up. He was a governor who was able to reach across the aisle. He worked closely with Mike Madigan on a number of issues, and he was truly committed to the idea of public service. He was really a good man, in my judgment.
Earlier, I mentioned the Illinois State Fair getting underway, and the Grand Marshal for the fair's Twilight Parade, Route 66, with a theme of Miles of Smiles. That's paying tribute to the 100th anniversary of Route 66, which of course goes right through much of Illinois, including Springfield. And the 2026 Butter Cow was unveiled this week as well. 800 pounds of unsalted butter in a refrigerated case. Hopefully the weather cooperates and it's a nice fair. And of course, political days will be taking place there at the fairgrounds next week. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Ben Zielinski with Capital News Illinois. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.